Hey, everybody. I want to welcome you to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. This is your host, Mance Rader. This episode is going up on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Evoox, YouTube, on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.libsyn.com. I changed podcast hosts, so I have a new address after the freemanbeyondthewall.libsyn.com. I think it's going to be a lot better because there is a way right there. If you don't use one of the podcast hosts, you can actually download the episode. And this is also going to be on libertarianinstitute.org in the podcast section. Just search libertarianinstitute.org/podcast, and you'll see all the podcasts that are hosted on there, and you'll see mine. I want to remind you about my book, The Kids Are Not All Right, A Meme-Enhanced Primer on Encroaching Marxism in the West. Check it out on Amazon. It's available for paperback, and it's available for Kindle. Today, I'm welcoming back Vin Armani to the show. Vin is a TV star. He is a cryptocurrency evangelist and app developer. Vin recently moved from Las Vegas to New Hampshire to basically be close to the Free State Project. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I'm going to ask him why he did it, his impressions, because he's been there about a month now. I want to get his initial impressions on what's going on there. And then Vin just got back from Hong Kong, where they had the CoinGeek conference. And if I'm going to have Vin Armani on, we're definitely going to talk cryptocurrencies. So here's a recording of my conversation with Vin Armani. How you doing today, Vin?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Good. You over that jet lag yet, brother?
Not completely, but I guess the only way to get over it is just to get on with life. So I'm glad that we're doing this. I'm glad to be on your podcast again.
I'm glad to have you here. We'll come back to exactly why you have jet lag after we talk a little bit about some huge changes that have happened in your life. It's pretty amazing when you made the announcement that you were going to be moving to New Hampshire to participate in the, become an active member in the Free State Project. I don't know if shocked a lot of people, but I think someone like myself who knows your background in Vegas and everything was like, a lot of thought must have went into that. So, what exactly went into that?
Well, Vegas is so deeply a part of my brand, and just in terms of who I am, I thought that I was going to be there for, a much longer period of time. Let me put it like that. But Vegas is such a transient town, and it sort of does this weird, every 5 years about, it does this weird flip to where it decides it wants to be something new. I guess that probably used to happen every 10 years, but now it happens a lot more often. So Vegas is changing right now. I mean, well, you've got, it's trying to become a city. I mean, the Golden Knights, you got the hockey team, and it was weird to see over the last basically year and a half the city embrace that in a way where I was like, okay, this is weird. This is not the Vegas that I know. And then the Raiders are coming, and they're really trying to do some things and turn it into more of a city. And I had a recent, I had a run-in with the city government. Well, I'm trying to do an art gallery. Well, not trying to do. I mean, I opened an art gallery in the Arts District in Vegas, and it was not conducive. And some of my dealings with that was really what made me want to speak out a little more forcefully about my libertarian views and be more public. And especially since the show that I filmed was then looking like, and now I'm almost positive that there would be no more seasons. And so I was out of the entertainment industry, right? So I could really express my politics, which are not exactly in line with where most people in the sort of left coast mainstream television and film industry are at. So there was no real worries there. And I went out to an Acapulco February of 2017 and just happened to walk into kind of the second room when Ian Freeman, who's the host of Free Talk Live, was talking about New Hampshire. He was just giving a presentation on why you should move to New Hampshire. And I had heard of the Free State Project, and I knew New Hampshire, live free or die, and I knew that it was a very politically active state. Obviously, the things that happened with the primaries, how it's like the first in America primary for the presidential and all of that. But I wasn't really clear on everything that was going on, and just from his presentation, I was like, man, this seems like a really interesting thing that's happening there in New Hampshire. I need to put it on my radar. And the next day, as it would so happen, I was giving a presentation in that same room. And just right beforehand, I was down grabbing some breakfast, and Matt Phillips, who was at that time the president of the Free State Project, happened to be right behind myself and another guy in line. And we ended up talking, and he said, oh, I'm going to come check out your talk if you're talking now. And then afterwards he said, hey, you want to go grab some lunch? And he invited me to come out and speak at Porkfest, Porcupine Freedom Festival, in New Hampshire that year. So that's in June. And there's one coming up soon. So I went out, I checked it out, and it was just unlike anything that I had really expected or experienced. And the people were so welcoming, and huge community of people actually using cryptocurrency, which was awesome, you know, blew me away. And, you know, many of the people that I already was starting to become acquainted with, and some that I had even had on my show, like Lynn Ulbricht and others, were there and speaking and got a chance to hang out. And so I was like, you know, this might really be something that I might be interested in doing. And then there's some other events. So that takes place up in sort of the north of New Hampshire. Then in the fall, there's something out on the seacoast. And I got invited to speak at that as well. I was like, okay, let me go check this out. And I was, again, blown away. It's kind of a same community, some of overlap of people, but a kind of different vibe, a little more of a hipper, more cosmopolitan, I don't know, a little more of a techie vibe. Everybody was an entrepreneur, a tech entrepreneur in particular. And very, very cool. Another very, very cool crowd. A lot of cool families, young families. And then again, was invited So then I guess this was what? When's Liberty Forum? I guess that's in February. It was last February that I was invited to speak at Liberty Forum in Manchester, which is, again, it's kind of even a different event, but it was a little overlap and whatnot. And by that time I had basically decided, you know, I think this is the move to make. It was, you know, I was still interacting with people that I had initially met, and people were actually, you know, I had interviewed quite a few Free Staters on the show, and the whole crypto situation was really blowing up here. This is really a hub of cryptocurrency activity. And with myself, you know, having my business Cointext and being so heavily involved in that scene, it made perfect sense. The timing was right. And, you know, I was ready to get out of Vegas at that point. I had a sort of a bad taste in my mouth over what I had gone through with the city of Las Vegas, which I'm actually writing up in Countermarkets, our newsletter. The last 2 months I've been sort of recounting that story. But, it worked out. People were asking me to come. They've been nothing but supportive. And so last month I packed up a truck and put my car behind, towing it, and drove across country. It took me about 6 days. And now I'm here, and I'm super glad that I made the decision to come.
How long did you live in – I'm sorry. Were you going to say something else?
No, go ahead.
How long did you live in Vegas?
I was in Vegas for almost 8 years.
Okay. And before that, you're a Southern Cal guy, right?
Yep. I was in L.A. for, I guess, close to 10 years before that, I think 9 years. So, but I was raised in Southern California. I was raised in San Bernardino. So that's, you know, like maybe 50 miles east of LA, and it's on the way to Vegas. It's kind of, it's on the border of the desert. So it was really, it felt like home still being in Vegas to me, you know, weather wise. And I mean, I was raised in 100-degree heat. So that part of it was nothing new to me, but you know, it still has a very LA vibe. Most of the people there are from LA originally, and so many of the tourists. But yeah, this is definitely a shift. And I've been here during the winter, but I haven't lived here for a winter. But it was, you know, it's well worth it. It's already been well worth it. Just to come out here, I feel very much, very much at home.
Okay, so you were talking about how crypto is huge there.
Huge.
I've heard stories that you can literally go about your life and do your daily business only using crypto. Is that true?
Yes, people do. There's a community of people here. I mean, Joel Valenzuela, who does Dash Force News, he's one of sort of the main people, and it's the reason why he's involved with Dash, but he has been living solely on crypto. I've had lunch with him a couple times since I've been here. I think he said something like 5 years now that he's been just nothing but cryptocurrency. So it started with Bitcoin and then went to Dash. But yeah, it's totally possible.
So you have grocery stores, you have places where you need to get your provisions. What about gas stations? How about that?
Yeah, he was talking to me about that. I guess he does like a gas card thing. So I guess he can get gas cards, and I think Gulf is the one, and that's a sort of a local one here. So he does gas cards that way. And then of course Amazon, right? So you could do Amazon gift cards with crypto as well pretty easily. And I've done that. But Whole Foods, I mean, I've been, even when I was in Vegas, I was doing Whole Foods with crypto. I was just doing gift.com and getting Whole Foods gift cards. And it was easy enough that, I mean, I was doing it right on the gift app as I was in Whole Foods. So even if I had sort of forgotten, I could just be like, oh, let me get a $100 Whole Foods gift card, and it would be right there on my phone by the time I got to the checkout. So it's certainly doable.
And you said that most of the people a lot of the people that you're interacting with are tech people. What are they, developers, programmers?
There are quite a few developers and programmers, but it's sort of more on the entrepreneur side. A lot of marketing people, and advertising administrative people. But there's a pretty big tech scene here. I'm based in Nashua, which is right on the border. And it's the border of Massachusetts, so it's pretty far south. And, you know, Oracle is based here, BAE is based here, so there's a lot of that community. And then up in Portsmouth, there is a huge tech community, but that's a little more on like the medical technology side. So there's a lot of big medical companies there, some medical software companies and whatnot. But it's a great state. It actually has, I believe it has the highest median income of any state, some of the lowest crime, but some of the highest freedom. You can constitutionally carry weapons here. So meaning that you can carry concealed without any sort of permit. You can also open carry anything, even into government buildings. There's not even any seatbelts required, no seatbelt laws, no helmet laws. I wear a seatbelt and most people wear seatbelts, but there's no law about it. I co-hosted Free Talk Live last night, and it was my first time driving back from Keene to Nashua, and it's no interstate or anything like that. It's these sort of windy country roads, which are beautiful during the day, but at night, pretty dark. And I actually wound up getting pulled over last night. Wound up getting let go at like 1 a.m, which I was shocked about, even though I had Vegas plates and the whole nine. But, one of the most interesting things about it was he was like, oh, license and registration. I gave it to him and I was like, oh, you need the insurance. He's like, oh no, we don't do that here. So it's not even, it's one of the few states. I think maybe there's 6 states where it's not even required that you have car insurance. So there's just a lot of, You start to see how much additional BS has been added into regulations and laws just to basically steal and plunder even more from people. And that's really being fought back here in New Hampshire, and it's nice to see.
What do you think the government's motivation is? Now, I mean, I'm one of those people who just thinks the government is a greedy little pig on every turn, and they want to take. Businesses that are doing, say you have a business up there that you only deal with crypto.
Yes.
Or what kind of taxes are they paying?
Well, there's no personal income tax here. There's no sales tax here. So I just learned there's a prepared food tax. So I was wondering when I would go to restaurants and there would be, you know, tax on there. I was like, oh, I thought there's no sales tax. I guess it's a service charge. I think it's 9%. In terms of all crypto, I mean, I guess that really depends on how much you want to report. I believe there is a relatively low corporate income tax here, but it is relatively low, and there's a threshold of an amount of money that you have to make, sort of like in Nevada. But there are where they really get it here is in property taxes. And so that is one of the things that a lot of the free staters are working hard to try to lower is that the property taxes are pretty high. So you've got state property taxes, and then you've got local property taxes. But the way that the government is set up here, I'm actually learning, is very, very interesting. It's the way that it's set up is it's set up in to be very decentralized. It's set up to for no real position to have a whole lot of power. And, you know, like all of the positions, I think except for governor, but all of the statewide positions, the Senate, the House, and all of that are all 1 year. I want to say that I've got that right on the Senate too. I do believe that's the case as well. And, they basically get paid almost nothing. So like you can't be their state assembly representative. You can't basically do that as a profession. I think they get paid $100 a year and they only meet for like, you know, a few weeks out of the year. So that's cool as well. So it just, it lends itself for there to not be a lot of laws passed here. And there's such a huge contingent of people who are willing to push back laws, from the libertarians and also from the Republican side. So it's really interesting. I mean, you do have the sort of progressive left here because it does border Vermont. So you're in Bernie Sanders country and there's a little bit of conflict there. But on the local level, it's pretty cool, man. And you can really pick and choose what town you want to live in based on, you know, how the local laws are.
Well, that's something that leads me right into the question I wanted to ask is, you know, we talk about the Free Project, and I think the Free State Project, anybody who knows even a little bit about it, associates it with Keynes.
Right. Well, there is some, I think that's mainly because of Free Talk Live, which is Ian Freeman's, Ian Freeman and Mark Edge. They've been doing a radio show for a long time that's on terrestrial radio stations and the internet, and it's been going on. That's been the sort of the voice of the New Hampshire freedom migration and movement for a long time, and that's all out of Keene. But Keene is a city of only, or it's a town really, and I think they said there's 23,000 people there. I mean, granted, there's only 1.3 million people in the entire state, but the vast majority of free staters are actually in Manchester, which is like an hour away from Keene. So Manchester is the biggest city, and then Concord is the capital. But, you know, in terms of where I think, at least in terms of my experience, where the two power bases seem to be with the Free State Project is Manchester and Portsmouth in terms of sort of where the political power and the culture is moving from. But Keene is certainly where the loudest voices have always been from. And they really consider themselves to be libertarian activists, liberty activists. And you don't, they use that term very, very proudly, and they really embody it. You don't really get that activist aspect from a lot of the other places. Manchester, you do, but it's in a different way. It's not as sort of anarchist, confrontational, in your face, on the street. It's, you know, how much can we do through sort of more political action, agorism. And here in Nashua, it's very much more of a lifestyle thing. So the group here that you know, I've ended up interacting with, and who were a lot of the people that I made friends with early in the early going and who really convinced me to come here, it's much more about living it in a community. So they're much more about having private markets and a lot of get-togethers and exchanging between one another and having growing it out from a community. So there's a lot of different approaches that people are taking. The people in Portsmouth are really more about their take on it is very interesting. They're really all about it's a lot of relatively young couples having lots of kids and sort of growing the community out themselves. They have a community center there that they sort of communally own under the Human Action Foundation called the Praxium, and it's a co-working space and a learning space. They go in there and they tutor the kids and have special classes, and they have, you know, cooperative learning, and they host events. And so they're really taking it in a different tack. So there's a lot of different things that are being done, but Keene in particular was just – it's sort of the strongest – sort of activist community that has made the most noise over the years, and certainly Free Talk Live doesn't hurt.
Cool. Yeah, when it almost like whenever you heard something negative, which I mean, it even seems that not only statists want to try to denigrate the Free State Project in the beginning, but a lot of people would actually call themselves libertarians, ANCAPs, voluntarists. If anything, any kind of negative thing came out of there, something happened, it was immediately, see, this can't work, you know,
right.
You're trying to infiltrate a government and everything. It does seem like that's exactly what everybody's mind up there is. It seems more like they're trying to change the culture. Am I making sense?
Yeah. Oh no. And that has exactly been my observation, is that most people are a lot less interested in changing the government than they are in changing the culture. I mean, you certainly have a contingent who will run for office and do the state rep thing, but it's my impression in each case has always been that it's a little more of a defensive measure for people. You know, it certainly isn't any sort of a path to power, but it's people who are interested in politics and are kind of, you know, the more kind of wonky policy people who are interested in going in. But for the most part, they're interested in playing that sort of Ron Paul, let's go in and say no type of role rather than let's go in and pass legislation role. So it's not that they're necessarily, I do think that it's much more of a cultural thing. And I think the more powerful things that the Free State Project ends up doing is on a cultural level, it's on a community level. And for me, it's not that I'm particularly doing anything differently than I would be doing if I was in Las Vegas right now. Like, I have Cointext and I have the show and I'm still doing those things. And, you know, I'm still writing, and these were all things that I was already doing. But I think just the sort of magnification and the boost that you get having a community of people around who, one, support where you're at ideologically and are on the same page and speak the same language, and then to have that network and community of friends, it's just for me, it really builds my energy up on a day-to-day basis, and that's what it's more about for me. I'm a voluntarist. I don't want to change the government. I want to abolish the government, right? But culture is a leading indicator. Culture leads politics. And I'm doing my part to try to change the culture. I mean, we all are, right? So as you are as well. And I think that over time, that's how you change politics. You know, that's how marijuana legislation has gotten to the place that it's at. That's how all of these things happen, is it's culture first, and if the culture's not ready, it doesn't matter what you try to do politically. So when culture's ready, then there's very little, when it's at that tipping point, it needs just a little push over the edge. And so I think that's, for the most part, that's what I see people in the Free State Project trying to do, is to try to build a community, show people that a culture of freedom is preferable, get as many people to jump on board. And and that's really particularly in a concrete way happening with crypto. And so the two big places are Keene and Portsmouth. And that's where you've got the hardcore people trying to get businesses to adopt it. And I think if anything, that's how we're going to bring the mainstream people on board, because, you know, a business sees their profit margins go up because they start accepting this new currency. And that is the entree into them defending the currency and defending Bitcoin and defending Dash. And if they're willing to defend these blockchain communities because it's in their economic self-interest, then look, that's half of the battle won.
Do you see, now you talked a little bit before about how the bordering Vermont, you would see some left progressives. Do you foresee in any way that they could take power there politically?
They're trying. There's an organization. It's pretty crazy. There's this organization actually called Granite State Progress, and they've actually become a kind of a propaganda arm of the Democratic Party, going around and really throwing a lot of propaganda about negative propaganda about the Free State Project, and quite honestly, just a bunch of lies and mischaracterizations of where people are at. So the Free State Project is more of an organizational body more than anything else. Really what they do primarily as the FSP as the project, is organize these what are now three events and what I think in the next couple of years will probably grow to be about five events. And they're not a political organization per se. All the rest of the organizing is really done ad hoc by various different groups, and anybody sort of take on and create a community and do a meetup and in their particular region or organize some sort of an activity. So again, these are individualists. This is not a collectivist group. So it's very ad hoc. It's very decentralized, and people are going to do what they're going to do. Some people are more radical. Some people are a little less. Some people are more establishment. There's people in the Free State Project who are complete statists, and there's people in the Free State Project who are absolute out and out anarchists in every way that you could imagine. And they're not per se, you know, we use the term members, Free State Project members, and it's, that doesn't even really exist. So basically what it was, this guy, Jason Sorens, I guess it's been about 15 years now. I think it was as part of his PhD, he wrote essentially a white paper that is the Free State Project. And his idea was if you could find a place, a state in particular, that you could move a bunch of libertarians to, that you could, in a sense, if you had a critical mass in a small enough state, you could turn the state libertarian, which makes total sense, right? So they put together this document that was a declaration of intent that people signed, and it said, you know, if 20,000 people will sign this petition, basically, then I will agree as a signer that I will move to a statement of intent, that I intend to move to New Hampshire for freedom, and I will do everything within the best of my ability to be there within 5 years of 20,000 people signing. And so I guess it was about 2.5 years ago that, as they say, the move was triggered because 20,000 people signed and they moved. But here's the deal. A lot of the people who are associated with the Free State Project, who you'll see at events, who you'll see at meetups, who are supporters, they were already here. A lot of them are New Hampshire natives. A lot of them were born in New Hampshire. I never signed the statement of intent and I moved. And there's a huge percentage of people who never signed the statement of intent. So it's like, I've never been a member of the Free State Project. There's no membership. There's no dues. I never signed a statement of intent. There's no, you know what I mean? I associate with the Free State Project in sort of this broader ideal of being part of a gender project. But there's no, you know, when people say, oh, the Free State Project this, the Free State Project that, the Free State Project is a relatively small nonprofit that has, I think, 3 paid employees and 5 board members. And beyond that, everybody else is a volunteer. It's basically around the particular events. So it's kind of a decentralized group of libertarian individualists doing their thing, looks like, and it's already had a huge impact on the state.
Cool. All right. We've talked a bunch about crypto, so I want to move on to another subject that I asked you to talk about. And we talked about how that you're still feeling a little down from jet lag.
Yes.
Because you were in Hong Kong for a couple of days at the CoinGeek conference.
Yes. 4 days total.
4 days?
4 days total, yeah. That I was there. Conference was 1 day.
So tell us about the CoinGeek conference. What went on there?
So it's a CoinGeek conference. This was called the CoinGeek BCom, so for Bitcoin Commerce Conference. And this was the first, but it's now they're going to have 2 a year, and they're actually going to be week-long things with 3 kind of separate segments. I think they're going to be 5 days total. And it's Bitcoin Cash. It was really the first Bitcoin Cash-specific large conference. Roger Ver had done the Satoshi's Vision conference in Japan. But if I'm not mistaken, and I'm pretty sure about this, I think it was either the second or third year that they had done Satoshi's Vision. So initially it was Bitcoin, because the fork has only happened since last year, since the summer of 2017. So this was specifically Bitcoin Cash, and it was pretty much all of the major app developers, all of the major miners, many of the major evangelists. Craig Wright was there, Roger Ver was there, Jihan Wu. It was put on by Calvin Ayer, who is the CEO and founder of CoinGeek, which is CoinGeek.com, which is a media outlet, but they're also a pretty major miner of Bitcoin Cash. And it was a smaller event, certainly as compared to like Consensus, but it was really quality over quantity. So everybody there that was heavily invested, whether mentally or financially, in Bitcoin Cash, a lot of the thought leaders. And you know, so they said, hey, would you like to come out and speak at this thing on the app developer panel that they had? And like I say, it was just one day, very, very high-end production that they put on, a lot of money spent. Calvin Air is, I don't know if you remember the site Bodog, big gambling, online gambling site. Mm-hmm. Yeah, huge, right? So he was the founder of that. He's a billionaire. And so, you know, he threw a lot of money at this thing. I think that they'll start making a considerable amount of money on these weeks. But it was really a chance for all of us to get together. You know, crypto Twitter is, I mean, that's a huge thing. And between Twitter and Reddit, but a lot more so Twitter, is really where the crypto community is sort of coalescing around one another. And, you know, it's an exciting space to be in. It's not just a business. It's a cultural phenomenon, and it means so much, you know, determining which one of these blockchains gains dominance, because the people involved with them and the technologies that each of them are bringing to the table really, really do represent different cultural ideals. And this was an interesting experience to see. I really walked away. You know, we have Cointext, which is our Bitcoin Cash SMS wallet, which has been very successful and really adopted well by the community. But I walked away feeling more confident than I had ever been that this was the right move, that Bitcoin Cash is really carrying the tradition, the original tradition of the Bitcoin that I fell in love with. And I think it'll be between Bitcoin and Dash, but I had said this already going in, as to, for me as a libertarian and someone who's trying to bring on adoption, and as the reason that I came here to New Hampshire, I do think that it's going to be between those two currencies at the moment, either them or forks of them in the future, that will be what is adopted actually as currency. I make the difference in the libertarian vein, in the vein of bringing more financial sovereignty and by extension more freedom to the world.
Now I've asked you this before. You've been on a few times. How long have you been into cryptocurrency?
I bought my first Bitcoin in 2012, in December of 2012. But I first downloaded the client. It was either late 2010 or 2011. I first downloaded the client, but there wasn't anything going on in terms of marks. It really wasn't worth anything. But you know, I have a software developer background. That's my professional specialty. So I was introduced to it by a guy I was working with on a development team, and he was like, oh, you should check this out, and explained it to me. And I downloaded the client and let it run for a day or two. And you could still do it with your CPU at that time. Let it run for a day or two on my work machine. And I was like, oh, okay, I could see the potential of this. But then in 2012 was when I kind of picked it back up and was like, let me check out and see where this thing is really at. December 2012, and by that time there were some wallets and some there was one exchange, Mt. Gox, and then when it went to 1,000, I bought at 15 when I first bought in, and then when it went to 1,000 at maybe about 8 months later in the fall of 2013, I sold everything, sold all the Bitcoin that I had, and I had a very, very good Christmas that year. But then I guess late 2014, maybe early 2015, somewhere around there, probably 2015 was when I started picking up and deciding, hey, I'd like to do some development on this, and let me see, you know, just as a hobby, sort of in between seasons filming of the show that I was on, and wound up writing some really cool code and doing some interesting things and learning more about the technology. And that's when I was really, really sold on it. And so it's been from then till now that it's sort of steadily been something that I've been hacking away at in my spare time. And then, you know, we founded Cointext with built on top of the BCH blockchain, and now that's really moving forward, and that's my main focus right now.
Do you come off more of an evangelist or a developer?
Oh, well, yeah, that's a hard one. I think you know, for me, the effort and time that I spend is certainly as a developer, but I think that where I have the most impact is as an evangelist. Particularly, I think, thankfully, since I am a developer and since I have, look, nobody's an expert at this point. That's one thing that you learn. Even the people who are the highest level developers are still learning every day, and all of us will admit that. And I don't even consider myself like a protocol level developer. I'm just an app developer. But to be able to, I think the most important thing that I'm able to bring to the table in this discussion is I do have a very good grasp on the technology. And I do work within the technology. I know its limitations, and I know some of the things that it can do that other people don't even realize that it can do. So I'm able to project and see out into the future a little bit of what's possible and what can come. But I think the most important thing is that I'm able to break down in relatively simple layman's terms sort of the who, what, and why of this thing. Because it is super exciting, but there is still a bit of a there's a bit of a barrier to entry in terms of knowledge, I think, still for a lot of people. But I experienced this with the internet as well, trying to explain that to people in the mid-90s when I first got online. And so it's really a replay of that. And it soon is going to come to the time when it's just as ubiquitous as the internet. I think most people, when, you know, people are on Instagram or Snapchat, they're watching YouTube videos and on their phone, and they don't really even recognize or think that, oh yeah, that's every time that Instagram notification goes off and all of that, you're on the internet. You know, but people, it's so ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's in every part of our lives. Whereas back at that time in the mid-90s when I was trying to explain to people, you know, first off, it was weak. The web, there was barely even anything on it. And now it's everywhere. And cryptocurrency is going to be that. But it's got the added value that you could, if you decide that you want to participate in it now, even just as a user, potentially you can be incredibly rich. Whereas back then, there was no real on-ramp, financial on-ramp for anybody except venture capitalists. So it's a really interesting time. It's a really interesting technology that I wish everybody could learn a little bit more about, because whether you're technical or not, when you get just even a little grasp on it, it's all you think about. I know so many people that's just, they're obsessed with it, and with good reason.
Well, I would probably, it would probably be malpractice if I didn't ask an obvious question, because I saw you were throwing some tweets out there about the conference and about Bitcoin Cash and the inevitable happens. What is, in your mind, the one thing that the BTC people, what is the main issue that they have with Bitcoin Cash?
Well, this is, I think, what makes this space so interesting, is that I talk about this a lot on my show, and I'll probably end up writing about it significantly more in my next book, but I'm still even trying to flesh it out and understand it completely, and there are people in this space who are. But we're witnessing a new phenomenon. It's something that melds each of these blockchains is kind of, it's got its own culture. It's almost its own religion. It's almost its own nation. It certainly is its own brand. It's taking all of these totems, all of these things that people naturally circle around, and then it's adding in the economic incentives to it. And they're really amazing economic incentives with no barrier to entry. And so people get attached to a chain, and it's almost like being attached to a religion. And so that's like asking, well, what is the real problem that Catholics have with Protestants? Right? And it's like, but people have been killed over that. You know, Protestants. I mean, there was the religious wars in Europe were over, you know, like the Lutherans and the Calvinists would kill each other. And it's like, well, what is really, well, he's a Lutheran. Well, he's a, you know, the Irish. And it's like, oh, he's a Catholic guy. He's a Protestant. And it's like asking what is the real problem that the BTC people have is a lot like asking that question. I mean, there are some technological differences that are significant in terms of for people like us who are actually trying to have this thing be money. There are some technological differences, but so few people use it as money that certainly those technological differences don't explain the level of vitriol. So it's kind of like a, you know, Mac versus PC sort of situation where it's like, what is really the problem? It's more than anything, it's branding, but there's an economic incentive. I think the most important thing is this. If you're interested in one of these blockchains, particularly in one of these cryptocurrencies, and you're holding a particular cryptocurrency, while there's very little friction for you to move to another, and while weirdly enough, they track each other in price more often than not. So if you had $10,000 worth of Bitcoin Cash and you had $10,000 worth of, or you had $10,000 worth of BTC Bitcoin, you really wouldn't have done too much differently in terms of your overall investment in terms of how they've moved. But there is this added economic incentive that you want to defend a reputation of your particular blockchain and of the currency that you're holding, because that possibly that's what's going to keep the value from going down, right? You never want a negative memetic hit. This is very much meme warfare. It's very much meme warfare with an economic incentive. And I think that that's what makes it some of the most interesting, really content and the most interesting discussion that's happening and most interesting cultural phenomenon that's occurring, is because it really takes all of these, it's the most current way that human beings are interacting, and it's right there in front of you with the ability to actually make and lose money. So the stakes are high.
What, knowing what you do about the blockchain, what's your answer to people who say that, like, extending a block from 1 meg to, from 1 megabyte to 8, mm-hmm. Decreases security?
Yeah, it's not true. It's not true. I mean, and Bitcoin Cash is no longer at 8. It just went to 32. So that was sort of one of the things that the celebration of the, that was there at CoinGeek. And what CoinGeek is doing is every 6 months, Bitcoin Cash is going to have a hard fork. So basically like an upgrade. And sometimes that will be a block size increase. I think where it's at with 32 megs gives the capability to scale to PayPal levels. So I think it may stay there for a while, but they're interested in it to terabyte blocks, which would actually enable it to be literally the money for the entire world, that every financial transaction in the world could take place on the Bitcoin Cash blockchain. They're working on how to make that possible. The security meme, and it really is a meme, when it comes to the blockchain, it's a bit misleading, because the security of the blockchain is only potentially at risk if you have a malicious actor who is able to gain enough control. Typically, we'd be talking about that they have 51% of the mining hash power. So these miners are doing a very difficult math problem to try to gain consensus about what the blockchain actually looks like. And it's this consensus over time that builds the blockchain. And if you have a very strong consensus and everybody participating in an honest manner, the chain stays very secure in that you always know that the node that you're talking to is following the actual correct chain forward, right? So what you don't want is you don't want 20 different ledgers out there and you don't know which one the person that you're trying to do business with is working on. You want to all work on the same ledger. That's the idea of Bitcoin, is that it's this decentralized, immutable ledger that has tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of copies among all these different machines all over the place that are all the exact same ledger. So when the ledger starts breaking up and they start following different ones, well, now you're getting forks. It's very insecure. It starts to break up the blockchain. But you can really have two sides of this coin, right? So, and this is like with any security. If you have, let's say you've got one actor involved and they control 100% of the hash power. In theory, well, not in theory, in practice, if they really want to, they can add in fake transactions, they can double spend things, they could do all kinds of things and screw up the ledger if they wanted to be malicious. And so some would argue, and this is what comes from the BTC side, and this is their meme. Their meme is, no, these other chains have concentrated mining power on them, and therefore they're insecure. But that's not true. Because if you have an honest actor whose economic – they don't even have to be honest. But if their economic incentive is, well, I control 100% of this chain. Say they controlled 100%. I control 100%, but the only way that I profit is by keeping it 100% secure. That's actually a better situation. That's a much more secure situation. And that's actually the situation that – that's the reason why most people trust their bank, right? Because – Think what would happen if Bank of America tomorrow started stealing from everybody's accounts. Everybody understands that, like, oh, well, the reason Bank of America doesn't do that is because people would sue Bank of America. Nobody would put their money in Bank of America. Nobody would business with Bank of America. So Bank of America's economic incentive is in keeping the chain secure. And so really with Bitcoin Cash, yeah, there when the fork split of several of the miners, some of the biggest ones, decided, yeah, we're going to mine this. And other miners that were on BTC said, well, no, either we're not going to mine it or we can't mine it because we're using these little piece of crap machines. And so they had to figure out a way. Unfortunately, there's, you know, this is it's an experiment in economic. There are so many economically illiterate people that they don't realize, well, here you have a miner or a group of miners whose entire business model is predicated on the value of this token going up. I mean, after all, they're the largest holders of these tokens. Every block that goes in, they're gaining, they're creating these tokens, and they can't even spend them for like 100 blocks. So why on earth would they attack their own network? This is like this would be like Bank of America's major shareholder. Like if there was a 51% shareholder that would be the person who would attack Bank of America's network and make people lose faith in Bank of America. That makes no sense whatsoever. Actually, the reverse would always be the case. That would be the person who would have the most economic interest in the price of Bank of America's stock going up and would therefore defend Bank of America's network.
You know what I was thinking while you were describing that?
Go ahead.
Hoppe talking about how monarchy is preferable to democracy.
That's it. Well, this is actually Hoppe's economic argument. This is the economic argument against democracy, right? Is that at least with monarchy, you know that the person in control of the levers of power is the one who has the most economic. I'm sorry, I think the guy's cutting my lawn out there. But
that's fine.
The person who has the most economic incentive in making sure that the borders and the economy of the nation are secure. And so you could say, so here's what you could say, and this is the argument that BTC side makes. Again, so much economic illiteracy, and it's one of the reasons why, well, it's one of the reasons why I trust BTC to be the one that pulls through. The main developer of Bitcoin ABC, which is the main,
Did you mean to say BCH or BTC?
That I meant to say, what did I say, BTC?
Yeah.
No, why BCH will be the why Bitcoin Cash will be the one that that pulls through and is the one that ends up being the currency. You know, so I'm there at the conference. The main developer of Bitcoin ABC, which is Node software, the main Node software that was the first one to branch off and do the 8 megs, that he's on stage in an ANCAP hoodie for his presentation. A yellow and black hoodie. And this is the main developer of the main Node software of Bitcoin Cash. So I'm like, okay, now we're talking. This is somebody who's flying the economic flag that I believe in. And so this is, as I say, this is an experiment in economics, this whole thing. And everything, particularly that the Austrian economics have been, Austrian economists have been talking about for a very long time, is playing out. All these things are getting a chance to play out. And it's more and more showing that, you know what, Mises was absolutely right. Was absolutely right. And so that's the side that I'm going towards. There's no question about it. You know, that's the real reason when I see where the economic incentives are laid out and having read what I've read and understanding what I understand about economics, it's just very clear to me where this whole thing is going to go.
Excellent, man. Well, we're going to wrap there. Do you have anything you want to talk about? Anything that you have coming up?
No, man, but I would encourage everybody, especially if they're in US, Canada, Australia, England, Switzerland, Netherlands, Sweden, to go and check out Cointex at cointex.io. So if you have not done sending cryptocurrency via SMS, go and check that out. Very easy way to onboard people to cryptocurrency. And then, of course, to check out my show, the Vin Armani Show, you go to vinarmani.com or check me out on YouTube. I'm Vin Armani on YouTube and on Twitter and Periscope, also at Vin Armani. But that's it, man. I thank you for having me on. It was a blast.
Thank you. I look forward to the show you have coming on coming up this Monday. I hear you have an awesome guest.
I think it's this dude Mance Rayder, if I'm not mistaken.
we'll have fun Memorial Day.
Yeah, I think it's going to be perfect for a great conversation, Memorial Day conversation. So never forget.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you later. I want to thank you for tuning in to the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. I want to thank Vin for coming on. Remind you about my book, The Kids Are Not All Right. Check it out on Amazon. I'll be back at you real soon with another podcast. So take care and bye.